This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 311 for Wednesday, March 27th, 2019. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this afternoon is Megan Townsend, and you can find her at @OhMeganTownsend, where it counts on social media. And you're under the weather today, so I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out and do a show.
Oh, no problem. I'm happy to be here. I always like doing the show. Maybe it'll make me feel better.
It is a chill podcast. I like to think that most of the content that I produce is pretty laid back. And the nice thing about podcasting is that there's no video. So even if you look like death, as long as
I look like garbage,
then it doesn't matter.
I'm in my pajamas.
Right?
I'm wearing a big baggy sweater. I have my big water bottle next to me. I look like crap, but you know.
Well, I mean,
I'm ready to have fun, though.
Me too. I mean, I don't come dressed to podcast. I mean, I'm in a track pants, t-shirt, my dad glasses, quote unquote, and I haven't shaved in months. So like, there's that. I mean, working from home for the win, right? But I say all this to bring up something I believe I mentioned, but I want to point out again because we've seen a lot of uptick in engagement in that on the other show that I do, The Spawn Chunks. It's a podcast about Minecraft. We've started a YouTube page. And so people that want to listen to the show on YouTube can now do it. And so I'm trying to spread the word.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
How did I miss that information? Okay. Well,
So if you prefer, instead of using a podcast app or listening on the website or downloading it or whatever you do, I mean, I'm old school in terms of podcasts. I still think a subscription RSS feed is the easiest way to listen to them because they just show up on my phone when there's a new one. I don't have to do anything. It's just there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are a number of people, including pointed out by our recent guest, Grian, that our audience on the Spawn Chunks is a Minecraft audience, and that audience is currently on YouTube. Like, that is where you find them. So there's no video content. It's a still image of the show logo, and it rolls over into a still image of the art, the title card art from that particular episode. Usually it's related to the topic, you know, a screenshot from a guest or, you know, pictures of villagers if we were talking about villagers or something. So there's nothing to watch. Me and Johnny are not on camera, and I refuse to do podcasting, you know, weekly on camera because I don't want to. It's like there's not enough added value. When I've talked to other podcasters, either in my kind of like peer group or people that are far more successful than I am, even at that stage, I'll ask like, so how, like, why do you guys do video? Like, why do you engage in that way? And is it worth it? And they're like, less than 5% of our audience watches the actual video. You know, it's even people that click play and don't look, but listen, it's so, so small. The reason that they're out there is because of discoverability on YouTube.
Yeah.
So you don't have to pay for YouTube to say, oh, that's getting a lot of views, we're going to promote it, right? That doesn't cost you anything. YouTube just does that to make everybody's experience better. So again, a tip of the hat to Grian for the recommendation, because we've had a number of people discover the podcast since we started the YouTube channel.
Yeah, you guys got a good number of subscribers on here. I'm just looking at the channel now.
Oh,
it's like, when did you make the channel?
About 10 hours after Grian suggested we make it. it was a 12-hour overnight. Let's do it. How far can we get with this, and how soon can we upload the archive? And now we're caught up, and we're updating one-to-one. Like, when we have a new show, Johnny Pixel Riffs is doing the YouTube management, so I send him the show art, and he does the audio edit, but then he also exports the quote-unquote video for YouTube, because it still has to be video content. Like, it's just a still that's held for the 60-minute episode. But it's up there on YouTube. And I mean, the Green episodes has got 28,000 views, I think.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, he's a very, very popular YouTube creator. His channel's got something like 2.8 million subscribers, and he averages in the, I mean, his videos average in the 500,000 views, give or take. Yeah, I mean, it was really nice of him to come on the show. He was a really, really fun guest. He's a good guy. And it was nice for him to kind of like point out some of the, I want to say shortcomings, but some of the dots and crosses that we had not put on our I's and T's. Because when we started the Spun Chunks in August, we just kind of went at it like a podcast. I had no idea whether the time investment was going to work out, whether it was going to be worth it, whether it was going to stick, whether we were going to get 20 episodes and then feel like we had nothing left to talk about. Turns out that's the opposite. We are just scratching the surface on all the things that we want to do. And it's got a fantastic community around it, much like the Sizzle Cafe has got a fantastic community around it. And I'm starting to see now a crossover where I'm recognizing some names in the Sizzle Cafe Discord that are also on the Spun Chunks Discord, which is super, super cool. I'm glad everybody gets...
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's nice to have people kind of coming over and enjoying both sides of the content that I produce. And anyway, I can't remember where I was going with this, but the idea of just being on YouTube and having the discoverability, because that's something that is not easy to do with podcasts. Like, you kind of rely on people... It's a joke that I use on the closing of the Spun Chunks, where you kind of have to tell people to poke a friend in the arm and actually say, like, no, you need to listen to this. You absolutely have to listen to this and check it out. Whereas YouTube will just point it and put it in someone's recommended feed, and they'll just like Minecraft podcast, and they're like, I'll listen to that. Click, you know. And that's how I've discovered a number of either Minecraft YouTubers, or how I've discovered a number of like video editing people that do tips and tricks and things. And because YouTube is taking the things that I've searched for, it's taking the things that I've watched and saying, oh, you liked this video by Peter McKinnon, you might like this video by, I can't remember the other guy's name. So like, there's a couple of other people that I follow, and I've discovered them, found their quality content because YouTube have said, because you liked X, you might like Y. So, so that's kind of where we're going there. I have no plans to put the Citadel Cafe on YouTube at the moment, just because it's a time sink that I can't justify.
Man, I'll help you with that if you want.
Yeah, well, if I can find some help on it, then I might do it. I tried it years ago. I tried putting it on my channel, and there are still some older episodes there. I just don't know if I want to do that. Or whether if I want to have its own channel.
Your YouTube channel has kind of turned into like a Minecraft channel.
It is kind of a Minecraft channel right now, yeah. So, and I do have art videos that are still up there, and I do plan on doing some more art videos. Some of my Minecraft stuff crosses over. But with the Twitch channel, I have absolutely split the difference, and I do mostly weekday or weekday evening streams are art related, and then weekend streams are Minecraft related. So I've got a split there, and I would like to do some more art videos on YouTube, but the Minecraft streams translate to YouTube quite easily. Art streams, not so much. And putting long videos on YouTube is not always a good thing. We were talking about this, I think, in the post show, where part of your recommendation and part of your analytics is how long did a person watch, and did they completely watch the video, you know, 90% or something like that. And if you've got a 3-hour stream, people might watch 45 minutes and love 45 minutes, but if they don't have 3 hours, they're not going to finish it. Whereas a podcast is a little bit more likely, because it's usually about an hour or less, to get a complete listening or complete viewing, right? But then the longer streams are not. So a longer art stream, I would then have to edit that art stream, and I don't have the time. So what I'm doing right now with my Patreon,
what you can do is just like do like a time lapse thing.
Well, and see, and so that, and that's the plan, is some of the stuff that I do on Vastin for the larger builds that I'm doing that take a really long time. The plan has been, as I've been going, I've been collecting screenshots, I've been taking saves of the art, and I've been doing I did one stream where I have a couple of clips, and I think what I might end up doing is downloading that footage, combining it with some still images, doing a 10-minute video, and then just playing that and doing a voiceover over it, like have all the audio cut out and just like, I'll just talk about what you're seeing on screen as it's happening. I did that with one of my concept arts for the tree of the Frost Tree in Vastin. I really enjoyed it, and it didn't take terribly long because because I've got the podcasting experience, I can kind of just hit play on the video and then hit record and be like, yeah, I'll just talk. You know, I can talk about what's going on, and it's not the end of the world.
I really like watching videos where like I love time lapse videos, but even without a voiceover, like if you just have like music in the background,
yeah, they're very satisfying to watch.
Those are so satisfying.
Yeah,
I love them. I love them so much. I think they're really cool.
So yeah, the trick that I'm not sure about with the YouTube thing for the Citadel Cafe is that we made the Spawn Chunks a separate channel because it's a partnership between Johnny and I. So it was better to have a separate entity control it. Whereas with the Citadel Cafe, that's just all me. And I could start to put the Citadel Cafe on my YouTube channel. I don't know whether the people would start to get confused between the Citadel, which is how I've branded the Minecraft videos because that's the name of the server, and then the Citadel Cafe. The art and the length of the video should be a pretty good tip as to what's what.
Yeah.
But then also, Citadel Cafe is not family friendly. So I'd have to, I think the solution would be, even though it would be great to bolster numbers.
I think you
can
put ratings on them, though. Like, you can
individual
put,
videos?
Or if you make a playlist, I think you can mark a playlist as, like, 18 up. Or something.
Yeah. So I don't know. I haven't really decided as to what I want to do with it. So I believe I've either taken down the videos or I've certainly hid them from being public. The older Citadel Cafe episodes. Because the other thing is that I probably wouldn't upload an entire archive of 300 shows to YouTube. The sheer amount of effort would just be. I don't know that it would be worth it. It would be the kind of thing where I might start a YouTube channel for the Citadel Cafe to have it be discovered. And if going forwards, you know, episodes, you know, let's say 320 and onwards start to catch on, then I might say, okay, these are doing pretty well. I'm going to slowly start to upload an archive and just let people know, hey, by the way, you want to time travel? Here's episode one from like 2011 or 2012 or wherever it was. So that's just kind of like the update as to where things are going with the show. I thought some people might be interested in hearing it. We are coming into the end of the month, and that's when Patreon charges all the people that support the show. And I do a pretty good job in the Discord of keeping people up to snuff. But I wanted to take a moment on the show and just kind of let people know where I'm heading with the show. I want to do more barista cuts. I want to try to get some more bonus footage for the patrons as well. So that's kind of on my radar in the future. But if anybody out there has any input as to what you'd like to see, either for like Patreon extras or additional stuff that you want to see us try to do in the show, platforms that we're not on that you wish we were, although we're on like iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Spotify, like all the major podcast players except for YouTube. I didn't think about YouTube because like I would never think to listen to a podcast on YouTube. Right? Because that just means I have to be at my computer, which is not what I want to do. When I'm listening to a podcast, I want to be out doing the dishes or, you know.
See, for me, just the way that my apartment is laid out, I'll cast the podcast onto my TV.
Ah, yes.
And my TV is close enough to my kitchen. Like, so if I am doing dishes, I can still hear the TV. So even if it's not a video-based thing, I can still hear what's going on. Mm. The only video podcasts that I really do watch are the Rooster Teeth content with, like, Always Open. Always Open is my preferred one because that's, you know, they have – it's a more of a lifestyle kind of fun blog, and it's actually, you know, run by a lady, which is really exciting because all of their other podcasts are very dude-centric.
Yeah.
But yeah,
we've been trying to find more female guests to come on for Spawn Chunks and stuff. It's hard. I mean, it's not that there aren't quality female guests to get. It's just statistically, there's just so many male YouTubers that are doing Minecraft, and it's just kind of hard to. Because we're going by topic, right? And it's like, so this is the topic we're covering, or this is the thing we're going to talk about. Who's the best for that? And we just kind of look at our, you know, our catchment and go like, well, actually this person. And he was like, all right, well, that's the best person. And it just happens to also be another dude. So we're trying to expand that a little bit more, but it's difficult. And it's the same way that we have some people complain. And again, we'll move on from the Spawn Chunks now, but people complain sometimes about us talking about the Java edition of Minecraft. Well, that's what Johnny and I play. I don't have access and cannot play Bedrock, and he does have access but doesn't have the time. So we don't talk about Bedrock that much. And so finding a guest or finding somebody that has more, knowledge and playtime in Bedrock is also on our list because we know we have a number of people that listen that play on Bedrock. Actually, I would imagine that most of our listeners probably do because the most of the players out there play on Bedrock. So it's one of those things where like, you can't, you kind of have to go with what you know. And so we're trying to diversify, but it's not necessarily something that we're doing on purpose. It's just like this seems to be a trend that we're noticing. So we're trying to buck it. We're trying to kind of steer back on course. But speaking of trends and some, I guess, bucking the trend, the topic this week for you and I is Love, Death, and Robots, which is a new series, original series from Netflix, and it is a series of short animations, little short films. I would say for people that might be uneducated, they would be comparable to say like the cinematic trailers that you see for video games, where it's not the in-game graphics, right? Like, Elder Scrolls does not look like the trailer for Elder Scrolls, but the trailer for Elder Scrolls looks amazing. Like it's this cool showcase of like the world and the magic and some really cool characters doing some cool stuff. Very often in video game trailers, there's not a lot of talking. Sometimes there is, but in MMOs, they tend to be, with the exception of maybe Blizzard, they tend to not have a lot of vocal stuff because you kind of imagine the player, RPing as one of these characters, and you kind of want to leave it as open as you can. But Love, Death, and Robots has, I can't remember how many episodes are in the series, how many shorts are in the series, but it's up in the
There's like 18, I
18.
think.
Yeah, it's more than the average season. It's more like it's almost double. So I watched four. You watched more than four, but I thought the thing to do would be to talk about the four that we both saw at first. We don't have to limit it to that. But we can talk about those and see kind of where we get. We're going to try to avoid spoilers. We might get into a few things here and there that we think are either not important or, like I don't necessarily think revealing a joke is all that spoilery. But some of these are pretty deep that I've seen, and it would be better, I think, for people to experience them on their own because I think it's excellent original content. Like it's different than anything that you've seen on Netflix for the most part.
And I've never really seen anything like it in general, at least not like as mainstream as Netflix is making it
Yeah, so we had
either.
when I was working in animation early 2000s, we there was a channel, it was actually a podcast, it was a video podcast that you could download and watch, and it was called Channel Frederator, I think. And it was a collection of animated shorts, some of which were not safe for work, some of which were just plain old, artistic animated shorts. I've gone to a lot of film festivals where there's a lot of animated short compilations and stuff like that. And true to form, the film festival experience is usually what you expect it to be, is weird, because it's not necessarily people that are animators in the sense that most pop culture people think about animation. They think about Disney, Pixar, How to Train Your Dragon, and DreamWorks. Like they think about mainstream stuff. They think about cartoons. They think about The Simpsons. And not all animation is like that. And when you get into more artsy, more expressive sort of situations, then animation can vary greatly in a good way. It's just that the flavor of that animation is not for everyone. So I'll prefix this by saying that Love, Death, and Robots, even the trailer is red tag, red band, not safe for work. So watch the stuff at home. Definitely don't watch it with kids around because it's animated. Some of it even looks cartoony. Like one of the shorts we're going to talk about, Suits, looks very cartoony, looks kind of like Plants versus Zombies, but they're dropping F-bombs and they're blowing up all kinds of stuff and people die. Like, so there's content in here that is absolutely not for kids. This is like 18 plus minimum. And even like even maybe I might even suggest a trigger warning for some of this stuff, 'cause like it is gory. And
It is. I was actually very surprised how gory some of it was. And there are some, like, there's one that we're going to talk about that was pretty gory, but there's another one that's almost even gorier later on. That's in the same similar animation style. That's like, you haven't watched it yet, but I've already watched it. And some
of
them get really,
okay. Yeah.
Really, really gory.
I mean, I know that there's some in the trailer, because I've seen the trailer, and some of the clips in the trailer are from shorts, obviously, that I haven't seen yet. And there's one in the trailer where, like, someone gets ripped in half, and you see, like, their skin, their muscles, then their skull, and then their brains and their eyeballs are all, like, ripped off layer by layer by layer, like folding open a sandwich. It's like, wow, did I really need to see that? I don't know if I needed to see that. But then, like, I'm not a horror movie guy, and there's a whole, ream of people out there that love horror films and love the gory horror films, and it's not scary. It's the gross-out factor. It's like, oh, God, I'm really uncomfortable. Like, so that kind of stuff. And so I'll say straight out that out of the four that I watched, 50% of them I thought were great. Like, yes, they're for adults. I had to retune my brain a little bit and just like, yes, I have to be prepared for a farmer to say fuck and for me to not recoil because he looks like a Pixar cartoon. It's a little bit to get used to. It pushes your boundaries in a good way. The other 50%, I was very uncomfortable. A lot of it I found unnecessary. And that, I think, speaks to my personality, the type of content that I like to watch. But also, I worked and trained in animation for the better part of 10 years, and I know my view of animation can be a little bit unforgiving with the more adult stuff. I always knew it existed, but I never liked watching it because I was just like, this kind of makes me feel dirty. Like, just not, I mean, some of it's, in terms of sexual content, some of it in terms of violence, all that kind of stuff. I'm just like, man, this is a little bit over the top. I'm not sure why this is necessary. Because I grew up loving Warner Brothers cartoons. I grew up in the 80s with the heyday of Disney animation. So, like, there's a lot of pop culture, we'll call it training, that my artistic sense when it comes to animation gravitates to in terms of appealing versus what is, to me, unappealing. Now, I say all that, and when I was in animation school, I watched a lot of Happy Tree Friends. Do you remember this? Have you ever seen this?
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, do I.
Man, I laughed so hard at Happy Tree Friends. And I think...
I thought I couldn't watch Happy Tree Friends because I was like, what is happening? Yeah. Why is this a thing?
I think I was just at the right age group, and it was just enough of a throwback to it looks like, gummy bears, and it looks like a children's cartoon, but then it gets very violent. And it's over the top. And for whatever reason, it's cartoony enough that it didn't gross me out. I just thought it was more of a shock factor. It was very similar, actually, to Family Guy when Family Guy first came on television. We were all gathered around the television in university watching the Family Guy because we just could not believe what they were going to say next on television. Like, that was, we just could not believe that they were getting away with it. And Simpsons was the same thing in the 90s, same idea. And so Happy Tree Friends for me was like, I can't believe they actually animated this. And so now that that's all behind me, when you get into these Love, Death, and Robots shorts, I can absolutely believe it because, like I said, they look like cinematic trailers for video games. Video games, as everybody knows, can be very violent. And when you have like, what is it, like Left 4 Dead or other zombie franchises, when you've got...
Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, Mortal Kombat's an excellent example. Of like very over the top, like grab someone by their skull and rip their spine out. And like, it's the kind of gory stuff that like people are like, wow, that was disgusting. And kind of like, I'm laughing because I'm kind of uncomfortable way. And I feel like these kind of go in that direction. So let's talk about the first one. I don't know if you watched them in this order or not, but this is how they're listed.
I didn't
know.
And I read somewhere that they actually switch the order around periodically. That they've done that on purpose.
Interesting.
From my understanding. I will say, you keep going back to the video game trailer thing. I know that Blur Animation is responsible for a lot of the show, and they are also responsible for a lot of trailers for video games anyway.
Yeah.
So they are like a video game animation trailer company, I guess.
Yeah, I think before Blizzard brought their stuff in-house, that Blur was doing the animation for a lot of the Blizzard World of Warcraft trailers and stuff.
Yeah.
They've been around a long time and they do some really, really, really cool work. I know that I went in kind of blind. I saw the trailer for Love, Death, and Robots, and then I didn't even read any of the descriptions. Like I just sort of hit play, and then, well, once I was watching one, I just kind of let Netflix play like three or four in a row as I was eating dinner last night.
Yes, which, yeah, we did the same thing.
By the way, maybe not a good decision.
Yeah, don't eat.
Yeah.
While you're watching it, there's a couple moments where I actually had to look away and be like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Yeah, and so the first one I watched was Sony's Edge, and I have to say that it's a good one to start with. I didn't dislike it, but boy, does it prepare you for all the things that I think are coming. Like, it is a flavor palette cleanser. If you just watched something like The Dragon Prince, this is not it. Like, this is going to change your mind real fast. And I would even caution people in reading the description for Sony's Edge, because it's very long and it spoils the short. I've shortened it here to remove all that kind of stuff, but the
description... I didn't even read it. It actually spoils the short?
It does, yeah. It gives away all kinds of stuff. So I've cut that part out, but the description is, in a dystopian future, a cyberpunk future, excuse me, a scarred and traumatized young woman partakes in gruesome death matches with engineered beasts mercilessly tearing each other apart for sport. It goes on from there to describe, like, a third of the action that happens, which is silly because they could leave it there and that's all I would need. It's like, all right, cyberpunk creatures, you know, battle royale sounds good. I'm in. It's one of these things that has a twist, and I really enjoyed that twist. So don't read the description. Go in and watch it, you know, on your own, because I think that it's worth it in the long run. It is extraordinarily violent.
Yeah.
And at first it's violent with these creatures, so it's less of a problem because you're watching these things that are completely imaginary, like, you know, things that have got four tails and spiky heads and one looks like it's made out of rock. Like, there's all this kind of stuff that's happening. It reminds me of the fight between Hulk and the Abomination in the Incredible Hulk movie with Ed Norton.
Yeah.
And so when one of those guys bleeds green, you're not really grossed out because it's like, it's not real. Like, nothing about it seems feasible, right? But the violence that happens against other human characters in the short does feel real and is visceral and very off-putting for me. How did you handle the smack in the face from Sony's Edge?
Initially, I was just like, oh, okay, whoa, like, yeah, why? Why are we doing this? We've already been through it all. Colin, my boyfriend, wasn't at all surprised. He's like, yeah, I was expecting that. I kind of felt that was coming. It seemed too perfect, I guess, at the end, like, you know, to have her win. And then, I liked that one. I think I liked that one up to a point. I liked that one until after the match.
Yes.
And then the whole middle point before the twist is revealed, I was just like, why is this happening?
So,
and on one hand, part of my brain was just like, okay, great, diversity. On the other hand, this feels like the beginning of a really badly written porn movie.
And that's how I felt too. And that's where I started to feel really uncomfortable, because, like, well, okay, this all, everything that had happened up to that point followed the setup. Like, it followed the description. It followed your expectations of, like, this rich dude asks the fighter to take a fall. It's, you know, insert any mob movie where they're betting on boxing matches from, like, the 70s, right? I mean, this is not a new idea. And so the young, you know, scrappy fighter says, I don't take falls. Like, that's not happening. You don't understand. And so they go out and she fights and these two monsters go at it. And that was really cool. I mean, like, I mean, regardless of any criticisms, the quality of the animation and the visual design, the cyberpunk grittiness, like, very, very interesting. I found that the bad dude, the tall, rich guy that was being a dickhead, reminded me of the Joker. And I think it's just the way that they animated his face. He reminds me of the Joker character from the Batman Arkham games.
Yeah, it's got a similar vibe.
Yeah. Which is good, because you just your skin crawls just looking at the guy. Like, everything about him says, like, ugh, you know, so, like, mission accomplished. But yeah, right after the match, there is an engagement between two women. And it gets sexual. And there was no indication in any other part of the story to suggest that this would be important or part of it. And I thought it was gratuitous. I didn't think it was necessary. And
I agree.
When you get into the monsters destroying one another with blood and guts and gore and chopping off arms and like bone saws and all this kind of stuff, and then you get these two, well, we'll say attractive. One of them is pretty roughed up from the fight, but you get these two, you know, cookie cutter kind of like attractive characters, both women that for no reason. No reason at all are all of a sudden engaging one another sexually. It just feels like a 14-year-old's wet dream, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, and so I thought, I'm going to look up to see if this whole thing was produced from top to bottom by dudes, because it certainly feels like it. Well, surprise. 50% of the directing team is women. And I want to say a good part of the... not the production team, but the producing team. So like the producers, people listed them producers. There was five or six, and three of them, I think, are also women. So I thought, all right, well, it's not, like, it was all written by a couple of guys, right? So I mean, that to me was not a surprise, but no. I was like, well, it's, you know, there's a couple, the supervising director was a woman. So I was like, I don't necessarily feel like it forgives it, because it still felt like a 14-year-old's, you know, fantasy. But I went in there after watching it thinking this is just going to be all dudes. They're all, you know, it felt inappropriate for where we are and what I feel society is trying to do, you know?
I agree.
Hot on the tails of Captain Marvel, which was a phenomenal movie and does so much for, say, you know, female superheroes and pop culture icons and stuff like that. And then to watch this, I'm just like, oh, really? It feels like a step backwards in so many ways.
I agree. I will say that there was like one indication. I had a feeling that there was going to be some like romantic tension or something, because when the rich guy comes up and like looks at the beast and says she's magnificent, or he's magnificent. Sonny looks at his, you know, little lady friend and says, yes, she is.
Right.
But there's like this very obvious like eye contact thing between them. But I don't know, just the whole like pacing and the conversation that was happening while they were getting intimate just felt really, it just felt really gross.
Yeah.
Like I had to watch it again. The first time I watched it, I was kind of just like taking it in. And then I was like, oh, wow. Okay. What's going on? But there was something just kind of gnawing at me. I watched it again this morning. And I was like, that's what it was. It just felt really stilted and just very like, and this is going to happen because the script said so.
Yeah.
Because lesbians.
Mm-hmm. Because lesbians. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I felt that too. Although I have to say that it did start to feel, you know what I mean when I say things are too good to be true? Like, it's just this is too easy. Something about this is off. Well, I was rewarded by thinking that, because there's two twists, and we won't reveal what they are because I really feel that people should watch this for themselves. But there are two twists that I really enjoyed. The first one I saw coming and I was just like, okay, yep, that makes sense. The second one I did not see coming until it was revealed. Like, it was just as soon as it happened, there was one line that was uttered by someone. And you and I can talk about this later, because again, I don't want to spoil too much, but there was one line that was uttered at the very, very end, and then I clued in, and then I realized what Sony's edge was, and I was like, oh man. And then I did get excited, because when the reveal at the end happened, you feel victorious, like as the viewer. So even though there was uncomfortable moments, there was a lot of stuff that I don't necessarily find is my cup of tea, overall, I think it did achieve its goal. So I don't dislike it. I just dislike some of the content.
Yes, me too. I will say as well, like, this is a theme, I think, in a couple of them, not just in Sunny's Edge, but some later ones down the line as well, where they use this theme of women who've gone through sexual trauma as a form of empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I really like that very much. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, on one hand, yes, like being able to, you know, rise up and kind of overcome traumas that you've experienced is super powerful, but using that as a storytelling trope I find is really disrespectful and a little bit problematic. So that is a thing that I did notice just throughout some of the anthologies, that just, it's a perpetuated stereotype or perpetuated trope that I didn't really like. Like, just you They could have taken out the whole sexual assault thing entirely.
Yeah, it's not relevant. You don't even have to
It
mention
wasn't
it.
relevant in any, yeah, it
She
wasn't relevant in any way, shape,
the
or
physical
form.
scars that the character has are
Was
enough to
enough.
say it doesn't necessarily have to be anything other than like she's had a violent history. You can just piece together what that is. Maybe she was in a war, maybe she was mugged, maybe there was other things that went on. Like just but you don't need to
To like pinpoint exactly what it
yeah,
is. And the fact that they used it as a way to pinpoint
yeah.
and she's talking about it while she's engaging in this intimate scenario with this other woman, it just feels very stilted. And it's like, whoa, you guys have never spoken to a woman before, ever, it
Yes.
feels like.
Yeah. Even I was feeling like that. I was just like, I'm not a like I don't know. Like I still feel like in a number of occasions I know on Citadel Cafe when we've talked about Game of Thrones and my guest happens to be another man and we're talking about a sexually violent scene, we're always very quick to point out, hey, like two middle-aged white guys talking about this. We're not gonna understand. We're not gonna hit all the points. Like we just know it, right? There's just no way for us to do it. And I feel like even me watching this, some of those flags are going up, going like, this has to be making some female viewers either uncomfortable or mad or like all kinds of.
Oh, there's a lot of people who are a little bit mad about it
Oh,
online.
really? See,
Yeah,
I've been
no, I
staying
had a
away. I wanted to steer clear of that ahead of this show so it didn't kind of influence my opinions. But I might look up a little bit more afterwards. I'm not usually one to look up articles about stuff anyway, just because I find it's just people getting on soapboxes and I don't need to, here I am standing on my own soapbox saying that I'm not going to read anybody else's. But yeah, I mean, I feel like in this sort of situation, it's you and I having a conversation, whereas in articles, it's just usually one person's stream of thought and there's not a discourse usually. Or if there is, it's in the comments and we all know in the internet, don't read the comments. So
Yeah, don't. You just
yeah.
never do.
Yeah, so
Stay
there's
away.
that. But again, like I enjoyed the quality of it. It does set the tone for the kind of stuff that's going to come, and I thought it was pretty good. Do you
I
want
also
to?
really like the use of the black lights effects in that one. Like, as soon
Oh,
as that happened,
production
I was
design
like,
was bang
oh,
on.
like
Really cool.
it looks really good. And that's why I
Yeah.
was like, I'm in this, like in the first half, and then like the kind of end half happened, and I was like, okay, all right. Well, it was good. And then the twist happened, and I was like, okay, it's still good.
Yeah.
With some unnecessary content, but still good. Like, I liked it. I
Yeah.
still enjoyed it.
And I like the idea that there's like you go in there thinking you're going to get robots and mechs and guns and space stuff and they go cyberpunk where the robotics is cybernetic implants between this genetically engineered monster. Essentially they're like kaiju, like they're like Godzilla type things. They're not that big, but they're still big enough. And so the pilot, the person, the human has got a cybernetic implant and then helpers connect them mentally to these beasts, and they transport their mind inside the mind of the beast, and that's how they fight. It's an awesome concept. Like it's so unique. It's not BattleBots where you've got somebody with a remote control controlling two robots in the ring, right? Like I mean, it has a unique twist to it that I thought was really, really cool. Do you want to talk about The Witness next and rip off that Band-Aid, or do you want to talk about something else?
We can rip that
All
off.
right. So I thought this was terrible. The synopsis is after seeing a brutal murder. A woman flees from the killer through the streets of a surreal city. And I thought it was gratuitous and predictable and hard to watch cinematically. Like they do this thing where they shake the camera and a lot of the there's like a cel shaded effect on some of the geometry, so things feel either out of focus or they feel tilted or uneasy. And I guess the idea was to try to make the viewer feel uneasy with the character and panicked, but instead all it did for me was like I can't focus on anything. Like everything was in focus and out of focus all at the same time. I had no idea where I was supposed to look. The audio is basically just 10 minutes of heavy breathing and screaming and running. And it just completely it reminded me of all the stuff where you're in a film festival screening of like 8 or 12 shorts, and you realize that the one that you're going to be about to watch is one of those quote unquote artsy ones. And you're just like, oh, geez, these are always 10 minutes long and they always suck. And there's always that exchange between you and the friend that you've gone with to be like, oh, God, this
What
is,
is
we're
this?
10 seconds into this and this is so far from over. And then the ones that you love, the ones that are beautifully animated and so fun and so funny, are like a minute and a half. And it's like, son of a bitch. Why do you do this to me? So The Witness, I don't remember how long it is. It's not super, super long, but I knew what was going on from moment one.
Yeah. I mean, I thought this one was the most visually striking for me personally.
Okay.
I thought it looked the coolest. I liked the rotoscoping on top of the CGI that also kind of felt like it was live acted, but also could have been mo-capped. And like, there was a lot of really good weight to the animation.
Oh, the movement was good. Yes. Very, the character movement was
very,
good.
Very natural movement and things. I liked the simple plot idea, like a murderous Groundhog Day loop. Was, you know, it's what I liked about a lot of these is that a lot of them were like familiar concepts that were slightly askew. And I kind of like that because like there's no original ideas anymore. Like we've already done them all. Right. So being able to take an idea that we all know really, really well, let's add a little something to it.
Yeah. Especially in a 15-minute short where you don't have, you know, act one of a feature film to world build and character develop and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. I did feel it was also gratuitous though. Like there was a huge section right in the middle that was just completely unnecessary.
Yeah.
But I did like the way some of the movement was timed to music. I like some of the camera angles that they chose to use. It was all like, I thought the design of everything was very, very visually striking. It was all, I don't know. It kind of reminded me of like the Borderlands video game.
Oh yeah. But also, absolutely. That's like, yeah,
like it,
that's
what it looks like. I thought it looked really, really neat. And I liked the use of like comic book. Like if someone sat down, there'd be like a little thud that kind of came up. It kind of reminded me of Scott Pilgrim a little bit, where like anytime there was a sound effect, there had like a visual word of like the onomatopoeia. You know, of the effect. And so I liked those elements. Again, the gratuitous nudity and sexuality was probably not super necessary. Also, shenanigans. It was set in China. There's no way there'd be no other cars. And there's no way there'd be no people on the streets.
Yeah.
Like I call that's like the most unrealistic aspect of the entire thing.
Yeah.
Is the fact that it's set in China.
Yeah. And there's no one else around. Yeah. No. To boot, like when they drive down the street in the cabs, there's huge buildings, just massive. And there's no one else on the street.
Where are the people?
Yeah.
Where are the people?
Yeah.
There's no way. But, like, that's the only thing. It was really colorful. It's very, very bright colors. It's very, I liked the way it looked. I get why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
I get why people wouldn't.
I mean, it gets some points for originality in terms of the art direction and how it looked. I just don't feel like I found that was distracting. There was a couple of points in close-ups where it's just like, oh, wow, I can really tell that you phoned in the geometry. Like, this model is really not all that good. Like, flat, dead eyes. Like, there was a lot of stuff about it that was not great. That was being masked, or you were not supposed to pay attention to that because you're supposed to be looking at, like, you know, how cool the hair / outline / shaky camera. Like, there's all these elements that were meant to distract you from a couple of things that I didn't feel were all that good. My criticisms mostly come from the gratuitous nudity and sexuality, and the I felt like it glorified violence, even though it still feels like a brutal murder, and there still feels like there's a clear bad guy. Like it's scary. Like the man in it chasing the woman down is not, it's not a good feeling, right?
No, it's not. And I think that's kind of the point too. Like I think a lot of the point of these, you know, and someone argued with me about this a little bit, but I was like, I think it leaves you feeling a little bit uncomfortable on purpose.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. 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 Don't go again, looking for happy endings.
No. Yeah. I don't think that some of the execution was super, I'm trying to find a way to word this. I think some of the execution was a little bit elusive. I think that the intent was good, but the way it came across was not very sensitive. But I also think that's kind of part of the point. I don't know. It's like when you get into art territory like this, and it does feel like art territory.
Oh, absolutely.
It's, you know, you may be trying to deliver a message, but when it's so vague and really loosey-goosey, it's kind of, people are going to take different things from it, definitely. Which is why, like, I think, you know, there are some people who are getting really mad about it and some people are loving it. And, you know, there's this different dichotomy because it is meant to be like a series of art shorts. They are artistic.
The issue that I have with stuff like this is that even though they've smacked an R rating on everything, I had access to R-rated movies when I was 14 and 15 when I shouldn't have. These days, even more people of that age are going to have access to this. Whether they are allowed to or not allowed to watch it, they will find a way. And I think for impressionable young minds, that more of this stuff is just not good. Like
it's not good.
I don't think
like they could have dialed it back by like so much.
You can
like
just you can like still communicate all that you needed to communicate in that short, like you and do exactly like you said. They could have dialed it back and still achieved their goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was done in the name of being edgy, which I think is probably why I have a little bit of an issue with it.
Yep.
It's like, oh, we're just gonna be edgy. Or it's this, on Netflix, but we can be edgy. Yep.
It's like DC films. Everything's dark and gritty because it's the opposite of Marvel, right? It's like there's no good reason for it. Movies are better when they're not, and you know, or sorry, superhero movies are better when they're not dark and edgy and gritty and stuff like that. I couldn't sleep a couple weekends ago and ended up watching that third Nolan Batman film, The Dark Knight Rises. It doesn't hold up. It's not good.
Nah.
It's terrible.
The only thing that holds up is Heath Ledger.
No,
is that the right one?
No, other one. Other one. The one with Bane. The one with the guy with the mask and all that kind of stuff. It's not
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy. There's a couple of things.
I love Tom Hardy.
Yeah, there's a couple of things about Bane. If it's not Bane, if you don't think about him as Bane, if you think about him as just like a generic movie bad guy, he actually is pretty good. He's pretty vicious. There's some things that he does that feel bad. Like he's crazy, and you get that he is hell-bent on his mission and that he believes he's doing good, and that's what makes him so scary. But everything else about that film is just like, this doesn't feel heroic. Like, it just feels like failure after failure after it doesn't have the same sort of feeling. Even if you watch something like Winter Soldier, which I just rewatched the other day, even though it's not necessarily a win, right? Like, it's the Empire Strikes Back of the three Captain America movies. It still feels heroic. Like, your hero was unwavering and he always did the right thing, you know, like, and at least in this particular movie. And that's where I think that, you know, that's where DC, I think, fails. So when it comes to, I shouldn't say DC, when the Superman, Batman, Justice League stuff, I mean, Wonder Woman is great. And with these shorts, it's good that they're challenging that. Like, it's good that they're saying, look, things don't always have a happy ending. This is more real life and more art. But they're taking that trope of being gritty for gritty's sake, and without a purpose, it has no weight. It just desensitizes, or it feels like it's meant to desensitize when it shouldn't. These are the kind of things that we should be sensitive about.
Yes, yeah,
right?
And it is very unsensitive.
Yes.
It is not very sensitive at all. And I think there's something niggling at the back of my brain while I was watching all of these, and I'm just like, there's just something really just, I'm liking it, but I'm also like, what is this? And it was like rewatching it, I was like, it's not sensitive to anything.
And in a way, it's the same way that a lot of people were reacting to Game of Thrones, kind of like in that third and fourth season when things started to get very violent and characters that you know and loved were dying unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. And it was just because the way that the story goes. And you couldn't at that point see the larger picture. And there was a lot of revolt against like how violent that show is and was and like all that kind of stuff. And I feel like that's what happens when you've got places like Netflix and HBO and stuff that is outside of the overly conservative, you know, network television market, in that they sometimes go too far the other way just because they can, because they're a private network or because they're an independent and they don't have to answer to, you know, the governing bodies. They have the gloves are off, so you know, the handcuffs are off, and they think, wow, the handcuffs are off, so they stretch a little bit too far, you know. And I feel like I have to watch the rest of these. I can't judge the whole series, obviously, but I'm hoping that if this happens again, from what I've seen, that the animators and producers and writers, having seen all these, kind of go, okay, so that's what we can do. So let's make a decision as to what we should do knowing we have no limits, but also knowing we don't have to go that far just to say that we did.
And there are some limits that are like, oof. Like pushed.
I mean, after that first one, after passed. Sony's Edge, I kind of know what I'm in for. But we can move on to talk about, let's do Suits, because I want to make sure we talk about this one, because this one's my favorite.
Yeah.
This is a community of farmers that use their homemade mechs to defend their families from an alien invasion. This is the one that looks like Fortnite. It looks like Plants vs. Zombies or a edgy Pixar cartoon. There's a little bit of cel shading going on, but not much. It's mostly colorful. Things are big and chunky. The lead guy, Hank, reminds me of the sheriff from Stranger Things. Like he's got the
kind of, but like a little bit nicer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah. A little bit more pleasant because he's got a wife and a cup of coffee. And he's like, all right, hon.
You asking her if she wants some pie and he's drinking tea.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's like, oh, we got a breach on the perimeter, Hank. All right. Well, I'll got to go and take care of that. And he's complaining about moving the herd and all these typical farming vernacular, like home on the range stuff. But moving the herd means picking up the cow with your giant mech claw and moving it across the field. Like, there's just some things that are just out there, and they're taking like the everyday, the relatable, the identifiable, and putting this wonderful homemade sci-fi twist on it, because these mechs are not like space age and sleek. It's like a tractor with feet. Like, it's just, it's so good.
I liked the concept of like, all right, I'm just going to hop on my mech and I'm going to like farm a land. Also, I can use it as a plasma gun.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was kind of neat.
Yeah.
I don't know. I kind of liked, again, that trope of like taking familiar concepts and just twisting them slightly. I really, really like it. Like aliens are a really standard thing. Like bug aliens breaching a force field.
It's like
pretty,
coyotes,
you know,
right? Like the idea is that you've got some other predatorial species that is coming to take your livestock, and you've got to keep them out. So instead of a barbed wire fence, it's a force field, and instead of a fox, it's this four-legged kind of, it almost looked like an alien from Aliens, but on four legs. It has that kind of like hard carapace head with no eyes. It's mostly teeth. Makes a bunch of snarling noises and drools a lot, and then there's a lot of them. They don't, one individually is not particularly strong, but
they swarm,
and so like it has like a StarCraft kind of like Zerg feel to it, and so there's some familiar territory there. It's very well animated. My gosh, does everything look and feel fun?
It looks good, and it felt like a lot more wholesome than I think some of the other ones did. Like, so I know that the concept of like love, death, robots, like all of them are supposed to have a concept of love, death, and robots in each short.
Right.
That was like the one stipulation. It was almost like an entry for a film festival. Like, we're talking about film festivals a whole bunch. The only one that I found had the most wholesome representation of love, like no sexualization or anything, but like, you know, happy married couples and like, you know, just love amongst neighbors and things. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's trying to get to, like everyone's kind of looking after each
Save
other
the family, yeah.
in a way,
get and, like, the families in the bunker,
like that, but with a lot of action.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And it was very action packed. It was really, I liked the choreography of it. I liked the design of the mechs. I thought that they were like really janky looking, which kind of made it feel like they made them themselves.
Yes. I liked the first
one. I liked that sort of,
I liked Hank's, and I don't remember her name. There's an elderly. Or elderly, that's not a word. There's an elderly lady that smokes a cigar, and she's a rough tumble kind of gal. And she's got a four-legged kind of, almost look like a backhoe sort of mech. And that was kind of unique looking. But I felt like visually they should have been more diverse between the three of them. I liked the concept. I like that cobbled together. I welded these three things together and put a plasma reactor in it, and that gives me my thing. Plus I've got a Gatling gun and all these other kind of things. Like I like that aspect of it, but I kind of wish they had a more diverse shape and silhouette. I did feel like when all three of them were together, it just sort of felt like they were very samey. But that could have been because they're all mechs, like the, you know, the two legs and long arms, and like the, you know, they're all, most of them were bipedal except for the one other one that I talked about. But yeah, so there was a little bit of, I guess, visual I guess, sameness there happening. But I just love the fact that there's you look at this thing and it looks like a tractor and it's got a winch on the back and like he's using it to fix a fence and move some cows. But then all of a sudden he drops out like Gatling guns and there's missile launchers and laser beams and like this is the kind of, I mean, we talked about a 14-year-old's wet dream before. This is a 14-year-old's sci-fi dream. Like, this is the kind of stuff that I would have drawn when I was 14. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This would have been so much fun to work on. The concept designer and the production design team on this must have had an absolute ball designing this stuff. Because everything has to be invented. It's like, okay, so this is a silo, but what if the silo is also a rail gun? It's like...
Yeah, no, it was really, really fun.
Right?
Like, I think it would think it was definitely my favorite overall. Out of all the ones that I watched, it was my favorite. I don't know. I liked it. It was, yeah, definitely felt like the most pure.
Yeah.
Out of the lot of
them. It had a good heart to it. You know, there's some loss, you know, like you see some grieving for loved ones. You see that relationship between Hank and his wife was really good. And I liked that the women were not damsels in distress, right? Like, they weren't necessarily out on the battlefield, but it wouldn't have made any sense if there was like six or eight of them, because you needed the quote unquote guy or girl in the chair with the headset looking at the monitors telling Hank and his crew like where they're coming from, how much time they got. Her job was getting families safe and in the bunker, but she wasn't afraid to pick up a shotgun either, right? So
it's true.
So they had that, like, it was a different role, but just because it wasn't front lines doesn't mean that she was just cowering in the house waiting for her husband to come home and save the day. Right. Like everybody had a role to play.
She had a lot of, like, they had a lot of agency, which I think is why I like this one the most, because everyone felt like they were on equal ground. Mm-hmm. Everyone felt like they were in this together.
Yeah.
No one felt, you know, belittled or lesser than.
Yeah.
Than anyone else. So,
she knows how to use all the stuff too. And they even hinted at the end that she designed some of it.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. I would love to see more like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would, like, I just, again, I haven't seen any of the others. So I gave you a list of what I've seen.
Right.
Some of the others that I did watch were really still just, I don't know, like, problematic.
Yeah,
for lack of a better
word. Probably for all the same reasons that we've discussed about The Witness and Sammy's Edge. Yeah. But this was just super fun. Like, I would play this video game. I want this video game to exist. Like, it even though I know
more of a show about that.
Yeah,
one.
Like that would be like, phenomenal. Oh man, if this could come up and be a show, like a series, I am on board. With the one complaint that I would want more diverse aliens. I was a little disappointed that it was just swarms of bugs. And because when they were talking about aliens, and once I saw all the cool design work and like all the set building and the world building and the mech, and they still hadn't revealed what the aliens looked like, I was really hopeful. I thought we were going to get like an intelligent, you know, like bipedal alien that was going to have like a militaristic kind of thing, and you were going to have like these really advanced aliens being beaten down by heart and steel and bullets, you know, like but instead you get bugs, and it's fine, it's not the end of the world, but I was hoping for something a little bit more diverse in that world. But yeah, I would absolutely watch more of those if they made them.
Yeah,
I think this last one is probably going to be your favorite, or one of your favorites.
It was the first one that I watched.
Oh, really?
What, Three Robots?
Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so this one's called...
Three Robots was my very first experience.
Oh, wow. So they set the bar high for you, and then they ripped the rug out from underneath you.
I know.
Oh, wow.
So I feel a little bit cheated.
Yeah.
Slightly.
So in...
You go ahead.
In the Three Robots, long after the fall of humanity, three robots embark on a sightseeing tour of a post-apocalyptic city. I can't speak today. These three
it's
robots.
Podcasting.
Yeah, I know, right?
Sorry.
These robots are in a lot of the trailers and a lot of the promotional art that you'll see online, because it's one of the few safe things that they can show.
Yeah,
it kind of like one of the robots is a little chibi red guy with like a screen for a face that animates and does all these different expressions, and like, and they all have different voices. Like one guy sounds like he's from a city. The other guy sounds like he's really nerdy, and then there's a woman that sounds like a voice assistant.
Kind of like GLaDOS from Portal.
Little bit, yeah. She has that kind of like digital. There's no inflection. She just kind of like says the sentence at the same speed from start to finish, and there's no holding back. There's no conservation. She just says what she's thinking when she's thinking. I say she. I'm assuming it's a girl. And she's the robot. I don't give her a name. It's just like it's a number designation. I don't remember it. But this particular robot. Is also very nondescript. It's a pyramid. Mm-hmm. Like it looks like a dumbed down version of a Dalek from Doctor Who.
It's a more streamlined Dalek, and she's like in three segments.
Yeah, and so when she
shifts slightly.
Yeah, when she dances, it's like one segment just kind of going left, right,
like back left, and forth, and right. like she's like, turning in a circle. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
There's some fun stuff. Like and she right before that, she walks up to a jukebox that's obviously destroyed and surprisingly functioning. It's like, show me what you got, big boy, and then just it starts playing music and she starts moving, and like there's all these little digs and humor and all this kind of stuff that's layered in there. And sometimes it's a little on the nose. The robots are talking about the failure of humanity and what war and what nuclear weapon destroyed them all. Oh, nothing. They polluted themselves into non-existence because they were idiots. And so some of it's a little bit right on the top, on the nail, but it's like, well, so we might need that, right
I
now.
I think that's why I liked it so much, because we're just like, hey guys, if you keep going, here's what's going to happen. I definitely think it had a bit of a political statement about that a little bit, which I'm a little bit grateful for. Like, if you can include a political statement with a little bit of humor, but also kind of be like, all right, but no, seriously, get your shit together.
I'm
into that. That's the thing why I liked WALL-E so much.
Yes. Oh, for sure. It has a WALL-E vibe. It absolutely has a WALL-E vibe. Right down to the bots designs too.
It has a really sinister WALL-E vibe. Well, yes. It's not at all. It's not like WALL-E, which is really cute and happy. Yes, it's definitely really dark. It's a lot of dark humor.
Dark humor,
everyone has like a similar design. Like the little red guy, kind of his LED face reminds me of Eva a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
Face moves and
And what I find so funny about that is as they reveal more about these individual robots as time goes on, the tall white one is a little bit jockey. He's a little bit like, I don't get it. Why do I want to do this? And the little red guy is very energetic and very enthusiastic and has a childlike curiosity about him. And it's revealed later that he's descended from baby monitors that became sentient. Mm-hmm. And so then that makes a lot of sense. And they don't call out any brands, and we won't either, but they do sort of hint at what the other two robots are descended from. One of them is an X-Bot 4000, and at some point during the short, he's holding another version of an X-Bot, and it's an entertainment console, and that's all they say. But it's a pretty obvious shot as to who's who and where they're from. And so it really, really was clever in that regards. I would imagine that you were tickled pink about all the cat stuff that happened.
No, it was just the cats were kind of sinister. I was like, oh, that was a oddly sinister thing. But also, like, the fact that, are we going to spoil this?
I wasn't super surprised. I just thought I was kind of like a fun eye roll at the end. But
they managed to genetically engineer their cats with opposable thumbs. And the cat makes a joke. He's like, as soon as we were able to open our own tuna cans, it was over for them. Like, because really, that's kind of all, cats domesticated themselves because we were able to provide them food. Once they're able to provide food for themselves, they're probably going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Like, cats are going to take over the planet, I'm sure. They're very, very self-sustaining. It had a really, really good humor. It was really unexpectedly funny. Like, the first, like, swear bomb that was dropped, I was like, oh, okay, so this is where we're going with this. All right.
Yeah.
So it was just sort of like, I think it was funnier to me because it was really, really unexpected. Because it looks like, when it first opens, it's like a really dark post-apocalyptic thing. You see a robot show up. It's like, okay, robots destroyed the Earth.
Yeah.
And then he was like, man, we are lost. It's like one shows up with like a camera. One's like, wait, no, like, it's just as beautiful as it said in the brochure. Like, it just like all those these robots are being tourists now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, I don't know, it was just a really fun twist on robots. But like, I liked the dialogue. I thought the dialogue was really great in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Out of all of them, I think the best. It had the best dialogue. I think it had the best dialogue delivery because it kind of felt a little bit like improv'd. like it felt like a really natural conversation.
Yeah,
Like
maybe.
Especially with the little guy. He was, you know, he was talking about the cat gonna explode. He's like, yeah, I mean, it might explode. Maybe don't stop petting it though. Like, yeah. Like you just like the way he's talked about things and how they find like a basketball. He's like the entertainment orb, and he's like super excited about everything. He was definitely my favorite. And his face, like the animations of his face when he's talking about bouncing the ball, his face bounces.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff like that.
Little details like that. There's a couple things that I think that were a little bit too. I think I watched it again, and one thing that I was kind of like, ugh, really okay. They wrote, you know, in blood on the wall, we are fucked.
Oh yeah.
And then underneath of it, it was like a dead cheerleader. And I was like, okay, well, thanks guys.
Yeah.
But I mean, like, I think the whole thing was meant to be super satirical and really,
yeah.
You know, very much a dark comedy. It's like a bad comedy movie, but with really good delivery.
Yeah. Really good delivery. And surprisingly, yeah. I looked it up and, Josh Brenner is the voice of KVRC. That's the little red guy. Gary Anthony Williams is X-Bot 4000, and Chris Parnell is the cat. The third robot is not listed, which suggests to me that it was an AI voice, like it was an engineered line delivery where they typed the script and said, here, get the AI to say this. And then,
interesting.
Yeah, right? Because otherwise you would think, I mean, that actor or actress would have to be credited, right? Like,
yeah.
So that to me is really, really cool. I want to now look up more about it and read more about how they made it because I think that's really, really cool. I don't get the KVRC reference. I might have to look that up. I mean, VRC sort of says video recorder.
I think VRC,
like kid video VRC recorder or something.
Was a brand of baby monitors.
Is it? Is it really? Okay. Because I get the X-Bot reference. Like that is pretty bang on. But the KVRC, I'm not familiar. I imagine any parents would probably be like, oh yeah, I have one of those. You know. Yeah, I'm not really sure. Anyway, I really enjoyed this one. This was the second one that I watched. So I went from Sony's Edge to this. And
yeah, I went from that to Sonny's Edge. So I had a complete like flip of like, so I was like, okay. So like the having three robots kind of be my introductory to it. I was like, okay, all right, this is cute. This is fun. Let's keep going. And then I had Sonny's Edge and I was just like, oh, what is happening? And I just had like a little bit of like a what's going on right now. And then my boyfriend and I figured out that it was like, you know, oh, it's an anthology. None of it is related. So it definitely kept us interested. It kept us watching. We watched a fair number, but yeah, going from, it was a very, very extreme tone shift.
Yeah.
Like super extreme.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you're right. KVRC is it's a baby monitor, manufacturer. I just Googled it and there's like six or eight hits and it's all Walmart, like across the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's all VTech, yeah. Motorola. So it's got something to do. It's got something to do with the technology inside of baby monitors for the new video monitors that are out there. Interesting. I thought that made me chuckle when he told X-Bot where he came from. I was like, okay. And the fact that he's like 2 foot tall and shaped like a toddler is not lost on me. Like it was really, really well done.
Yeah, it was cute.
I love the character design on this too. It was perfect. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. If you'd like to find links to the stuff that Megan and I talked about, you can visit the show notes at thecitadelcafe.com. You can also write us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and let us know what you thought of the shorts that you have managed to watch of Love, Death, and Robots. If you head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, you can support the show. We're 100% listener supported. If you enjoy what you're hearing and you want to give a little bit of value back into the show, you can do that over at Patreon. And we are currently at 16 patrons, which is one ahead of where we were in February, which is awesome. Don't let that stop you, though. So if you want to join the community, there's a Discord where we talk about all kinds of nerdy stuff. You can do that at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, and you will have my eternal gratitude. Everything that I am doing online right now is at joelduggan.com. That includes my illustration and design portfolio, Right now, I'm going to point you towards Twitch, where I do a lot of live art streaming. So I'm working on a couple of commissions right now, and I have permission from the clients to stream the production of those live. And it's been a lot of fun because I get to hang out with you folks and talk about all kinds of things in the chat while I'm drawing. So if you enjoy that kind of thing, then find me over at twitch.tv/JoelDuggan. Megan, where can people find all the cool stuff that you're doing online?
People can find me online on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube at @OMeganTownsend. I've actually been rebranding my YouTube channel a little bit to try and neaten it up, giving it a facelift before I start posting new content that I've been pre-recording over the last couple of months. If you want to follow my personal project, The Era of Keldinen, which I'll probably be outsourcing chapters to very soon, I will be posting a link to that on my Instagram page for that, The Era of Keldinen, H-E-I-R.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where there is love, death, and robots, but you can only pick two.